This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So who have you just had?
Daniel.
Oh, you're just, oh, so we have to follow Daniel. Oh, my God. Thanks a lot. That's not fair.
Well, this
fair.
Is neat. So this is a recording thing, huh? On your...
And you are not going out live. No. Daniel's
yeah, that's right.
Daniel.
Oh, my God,
you're being filmed.
Yeah, I guess we'll fuck it. I'll start.
Okay.
Okay. So, when you obviously, what was it like putting together the script for this project and the story, and how much collaboration was it with Daniel?
Well, there was a lot of collaboration with Daniel, and he was very involved with the screenplay. He was, you know, he's involved with everything. I mean, he's someone who gives 100%. All the time, and he's really smart. He really knows what he's talking about. So I think we're pleased to get the benefit of his brain and passion and excitement.
Yeah, yeah, he's you know, he has the voice of the character down, and he's very good at working on the dialogue and the ideas and how to express them. And he and Mark worked on that. You know, almost every scene they spent a lot of time working together on.
Was it always planned for, you have some very interesting editing choices, I'll ask Mark this, between the action, like between two different mm-hmm. things going on at the
yeah.
same time.
Parallel
how early
action.
On was that developed, and was it in the script, or was that a Mark choice?
It was a Mark.
Yeah,
definitely.
Very much
the Tosca opera
yeah.
scene was definitely
mm-hmm.
Mark. He conceived it that way, and I think it's very, very well done.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, please keep bringing in directors who like bring in their own view. I thought it was like
yeah.
so refreshing for
yeah.
the moment. Like,
yeah.
whatever, you know, it was so great. And I was just curious, you know, there's been talk of like I think a longer break between this one and the next movie. Is that true, or is it?
It's just, I think it's just how we're feeling at the moment.
Yeah, I mean,
let's get Christmas over and then we'll.
You know, two of these back to back is, you know, we started writing the last one when we were post. Mm. On the last one, so it's been very it's been a very tight, these things are done a very tight schedule, very tight post. When we finished, well, Mark had like 3 weeks or something,
well, 5 weeks to cut the movie,
yeah, and then we had then we had the screening, and then we had 1 week to recut it, and then we were into scoring it, and, you know, it's just been going on like that.
Traditionally, do most of the Bond films have a longer editing time than this one?
Mm,
not
tend
much.
To be tight.
But this is really tight.
Well, you know, you're trying to keep them very contemporary, so, you know, you try to kind of, you know, we started filming in January and we're releasing mm-hmm. in November, so six-month shooting schedule.
Mm-hmm. 23 weeks.
The challenge with this, I guess, is with all the various locations, because you have so many locations with this, and, you know, I mean, just the logistics of it must have been a nightmare, especially as a producer, both for both of you. And can you talk a little bit about, you know, working in the various locations and the choice of such a diverse group of countries and locations for this one?
Well, this has been the most weeks on location of any Bond film, 13 weeks on location, and out of 23. So it's over 50, much over 50%. And Panama, 9 weeks there, 10 days. And Chile, Bergens, 9 days. Italy, all up and down. We had units in Mexico and all that. So it was a lot to keep organized and going. We have a great production group that really are right on top of things, but still, you can imagine we have to bring everybody with us, 300 people down to Panama, and just even keeping them in hotels and getting them fed every day, you know, let alone making a movie, as you know.
Which location presented the biggest challenge?
They all had their moments.
They all had their moment. I mean, fortunately, Mark is so well planned, and that, you know, he was able to kind of be very specific and visualize everything he needed to be done. So that's half the battle. Yeah.
Before we started the picture, he had every set and every location mapped out with his DP, and he had the position of every camera setup on the set before we started the movie. Unheard of. Absolutely unheard of.
So it made it a lot easier.
So when Barbara says he's prepared, he is prepared. But he's also very creative, and he can adjust instantaneously to anything that's happening and make it work. So he has those two things that really produce a fantastic result.
He's an interesting choice. He's all the range of things that he's directed in his career.
Brilliant director. Great guy.
Recently, Chris Nolan pushed the boundaries of film with the IMAX of this summer's Dark Knight. Other filmmakers have talked about using the format or 3D and stuff like that in their upcoming projects to reinvent, or to get more people into the theater. For the Bond franchise, with those kind of technological innovations, is there any thought on your guys' end to adding those to the franchise?
Yeah, we've talked about it. It's certainly something we'd probably pursue. Just was a little, because we had such a tight schedule on this one, it was a bit tough to go that way on this movie, but we're certainly considering it.
Are you sifting through all of the stories? Is the next story going to follow like this one did from the last one? Is it going to... No, and if not, then are you...
I don't know. I mean, we haven't thought about it, but it doesn't necessarily have to. I think the last one had to, because it was unresolved, very much.
This is a short story. Are you looking through all of Ian Fleming's other material? Is there anything left?
We've been through it many times, over and over again. We know it very well. And I think, and we do go back. We ask the writers to go back. We go back and read the material. It's not so much for any plot points or even story points, but you do kind of get immersed in the character, because the character is very much Ian Fleming's character.
Mm-hmm. Are we ever going to see Spectre, or is Quantum the modern iteration of it?
It seems like an appropriate organization for today's world, but we haven't even started this script.
If I could go back to my question about IMAX and 3D, if you don't mind, is there which of those has more interest to you guys? Do you think 3D would ever be in the Bond franchise, or do you think you're thinking more IMAX?
Yeah, let me ask you something about 3D. I mean, sure. Do you think you can actually watch an entire movie in 3D? Because what they've been doing is giving you bits of it. When you see these films, you go into it like Superman. You went into it for a while, and you came out of it, and you went into it for a while. So my own, as a theater goer, I thought it was kind of broke up the narrative. These are the questions I think all of us will have to face when we talk about using 3D.
I was going to say, James Cameron is shooting his $300 million Avatar in 3D.
I can't wait to see it.
And I'm just wondering, obviously everyone has talked about, the people who've seen footage have said it's just revolutionary. I'm just curious.
No, I mean, if it's technologically different, it's great. Right now it doesn't seem to be, but if he can...
Well, if anyone can do it, he can.
That would be fantastic.
Hope he does it, and then everybody will follow.
Okay, and also, the movie's about an hour and 40 minutes. I'm going to imagine there's some deleted stuff. Is there anything?
No.
Just tightly cut, not deleted.
There's nothing deleted.
So that means the DVD is bare bones?
Pretty much bare bones, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, they might... they had a lot of material that was shot, but, like you said, the parallel action, the way it was cut on the opera and thing, and other places, that... it brings it down a lot.
There's one scene that was deleted.
The end. We had an end that was cut, but I don't know.
Alternate ending, but we cut it. So, but no,
there's
one
day
not
shoot
like
we cut.
Can you talk about having Gamma dipped in oil? Your dad produced Goldfinger, right? It's obviously an homage to that. How did you feel about having that in here?
It was something the screenwriters came up with, and I think we just... It was beautifully done. She's an extraordinary actress. And I think, the public seemed to have responded very well to it so far in the screenings we've had, It's nice to do an homage.
Oil finger.
Oil finger.
Oh, jeez. Are you thinking of bringing Moneypenny and maybe people, characters that other people know real well, and Hugh, are you thinking of putting them in future films, or is that not coming up yet?
Well, I think when we started out with GoldenEye, we said we're going to do this as if this is the first Bond picture, and there never were any others. So,
Casino Royale.
I'm so happy.
You watch my back too.
So with that, we thought, well, that and now, So they weren't in there, and they really didn't have a place for them here. You would have had to horn shoe those things. Mm-hmm. But will they come in? It really depends on the story and whether it's generic to the story. I mean, whether it's integral part of it, and whether it's appropriate. I don't think we're having any preconceived notions about where to take this. I think hopefully we'll create some new characters that'll have their own resonance.
I'm curious if you guys have the control of picking a release date, or do you have any sort of studio or company saying, we really need this for 2013, we really need this for whatever, or do you have that freedom to say...
We work with a studio on the date, you know, it's something we mutually agree.
Is there any sort of added pressure they say, we really need that? I'm just curious how that dynamic
that
works.
That has happened in the, over the years, right. You know, where they've said we need
a model.
But, you know, in our collaboration with Sony, you know, we just reached everything by sort of mutual agreement. I mean, we've had the happiest working relationship we've had with the studio with Sony. So
they're great.
We always end up coming together on stuff. So
You guys were going to be huge regardless, but how happy were you when you heard Harry Potter was moving away?
Well, the thing is, you know, our friends make Harry Potter. We're very close to them, David Heyman and everyone. And so we all kind of root for each other. And I think we all feel that good movies are good for the marketplace. And we're very happy to stand beside Harry Potter on a couple of occasions. We opened up near them. And, you know, we do kind of root for each other, believe it or not. I mean, because the thing is, if people go to the movies and have a good experience, they're going to go again. Bad movies are the enemy, you know, bad movies, and people go, you know, oh, I wasted $10 and 2 hours, and, you know, they, oh, I don't want to go back again. Good movies are good for us, so. Anyway, I hope they obviously, you know, wanted to move their date for the summer, and let's hope they have a big, big hit, which they will.
Is there a possibility of bringing part of the same creative team back if there is a third film, like in terms of directing and writing?
We have to see what, you know, who's available, whether they want to do it. You know, Mark feels a bit burned out, I think, at this point. I don't think he's ready to discuss doing another film with us, but we'd certainly welcome him back.
Yeah, you know,
and he has a great team. All the people, all the DPs and the visual effects people and the editors, they're wonderful.
This was a very interesting film because it really is a sequel to Casino Royale. I don't believe, and I could be wrong about this, that any other Bond film has really done something like this, where this is two of two.
Yep.
And is this something that everyone seems to have liked this thing? Is this something that you guys would consider doing for the future, where you're going to carry a film into the next one, or are you thinking more standalone for future projects?
I think, you know, at the end of Casino Royale, felt very important to complete the story with another movie. And I think, you know, at the end of this, it feels like Bond's sort of emotional arc in terms of the Vesper story, which is so important, is sort of come full circle. So, you know, I think that we'll just make movies as we make them, and, you know, it's possible that there'll be two that will come together, but I mean, it's not a plan or anything. Just make a movie and see what happens.
And what's the experience like for you guys on set? Obviously, a lot of people are taking pictures with paparazzi, and a lot of stuff leaks on the internet. Is that something that you guys are conscious of while you're filming, or you're just like, it's going to get out
what
there?
What do you think? What do you think? When you have your actors are being chased and run off the street, your director's cars, you know, run off the road, slash their tires. Yeah. You know, it's a really unpleasant, terrifying experience. The paparazzi terrify and torment people and endanger people. And it's really unpleasant. So we try to protect our people as much as possible, but we've had some very unpleasant situations. Mm. Not nice at all.
Where did the tire slashing happen?
In Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just coming from the airport, I was coming there. I guess they thought Daniel was in my car. One car came up, went flying past us, then slowed down, so we had to slow down. Another one came up right next to us, and with a TV camera, lights all flashing in the thing, and they're filming it, you know. So that's the kind of torment that the actors are, you know, and we found it. I was there with
horrific.
My wife. We were, you know, very
it's
horrific.
Terrifying.
But and that happens to them constantly. You know, luckily they're not particularly interested in me, but
God
that
forbid
happens
there's another major incident.
Yeah. But you can see what, you know, what happened to Di and that. You know, that those type of things make, you know, make you disoriented, and it's dangerous.
Going back, I know it's going back to the first film, but you totally reinvented Bond with Daniel Craig. And I just wondered why you chose him and why you decided here's a blonde Bond. I mean, it's so different from any other Bond that I even remember, except for maybe Sean Connery. But, I mean, what was it about him that you chose? Why did you
well, he was just in here, right? So, isn't it a moot point? I mean, he's only like the most gorgeous, sexiest, most brilliant actor in the whole world that you can't take your eyes off. If you look at his work, which we did, every time he is on the screen, you can't look at anyone else. I mean, he is so charismatic. He is so mesmerizing. He so immerses himself in a role. He's so unbelievably powerful. I mean, so like, how could you not hire him?
I mean, and the other thing about blonde and blue eyes, you know, Roger Moore was blonde and blue eyes. I don't know why everybody talks like, oh my gosh. Yeah,
what was he?
You know, my God, no, seven films, and well, this is the first time we ever have a blonde.
So you said there may be some gadgets coming up next time, because I know you kind of have steered away from the gadgetry stuff from, you know, in Casino and this. But, you know, I mean, whether or not Q comes back or not, is it, you know, a possibility? Because, I mean, we're so tech-oriented, you know.
Well, exactly. I mean,
yeah. What are we going to do? Show an iPhone? Hey.
Well, the little maps in M's office are kind of, you know, where they do all that kind of stuff. But
well, I think that's sort of a point, and one of the themes of the film is that, you know, we have all this technology, and we like to think we can do all this stuff by remote. And so M's sitting in this very clinical office with all this technology. And the reality is, the man on the ground, or the woman on the ground, in real life and in this movie, you know, they're out there in the firing line. And they're out of the comfort zone, you know. It's a very different world when you're in the streets trying to save the world, you know. So I think technology, technology gives you a false sense of security. It always comes down to human beings on the ground doing work.
So there won't be any little car that turns into a boat or anything?
Who knows, you know, who knows.
Daniel wants an underground sub.
Oh, okay. We'll get him one for Christmas.
Thank you.